Hey everyone, Carolina here. Before we start today's episode, I'm going to get a little personal. I know firsthand that working in the entertainment industry can take a toll on your mental health. If you've been with me since the beginning of the podcast, you know I've talked about it plenty over the 90 plus episodes of this show. The high stress of production combined with minimal sleep and a no days off mentality can be a recipe for disaster, or at the very least, some serious burnout. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, BetterHelp. With BetterHelp, therapy is now more affordable and accessible. By filling out a quick online questionnaire, BetterHelp can match you to a professional therapist in a matter of days. Signing up is simple. Just click the link in this episode's description or go to betterhelp.com/AOP. Clicking the link not only helps support this podcast, but it also gives you 10% off your first month of therapy. And in case you're wondering, I've recently started using BetterHelp myself and found it to be a super stress-free experience. So if you're struggling, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the description or visit betterhelp.com/AOP. That's BETTERHELP.com/AOP. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Angle on Producers, the show where we take you behind the scenes and into the shoes of producers across all corners of the entertainment industry. I'm your host and fellow producer, Carolina Groba. However you found the show, thank you so much for tuning in and doing this life thing with me. And speaking of life thing, for those of you that were in LA and came out to the first ever Angle on Producers event last week, thank you so much. It was a delight to meet you all and put faces to the emails and the social media handles. It was such a success. I'm excited to do more of these come the summer and unite us even more and make those intentional connections and connect you guys to each other in ways that hopefully spark collaborations. That would be so dreamy. As you may have seen in our newsletter, and if you don't yet subscribe, please do, or email me, send me a note on IG and we can add you to it. And also, we've been posting about this on social media, but we have launched a Patreon. After many years of doing the show as a labor of love, we are at the point where we need your financial support to keep this going in a more substantial way. So if the show has brought you value and you're in a position to contribute whatever amount you can monthly to keep us going, to help us have a healthy budget so we can continue to do events and all these other goals I have for the show this year and onwards, please head on over to patreon.com/angleonproducers and sign up today. I am over the moon to share that today's guest is none other than Grammy, Emmy, and Tony Award-winning actress, singer, author, and now producer, Miss Cynthia Erivo. She is set to star as Alphaba opposite Ariana Grande's Glinda in Universal's highly anticipated film, the adaptation of the hit musical Wicked from director John Chu. She can most recently be seen starring in Drift, a project that also happens to be her producerial debut. Drift follows a young Liberian refugee named Jacqueline, who Erivo plays, who has barely escaped her war-torn country to a Greek island. The film had its world premiere at the 2023 Sundance Film Festival and opened to rave reviews. It's a beautiful character piece that she delivers with a nuanced performance that's truly unforgettable. It's playing in select theaters across the U.S., and you can find showtimes at drift.film. When brainstorming guest ideas for the podcast in 2024, Cynthia was on our dream list. We knew that inviting her would be a reach, and we prepared ourselves for a firm no thank you from her team. And so when we got an excited yes just a few days later, we couldn't believe it. I am thrilled to now be able to share the product of that dream with all of you, which is fitting since one of the key takeaways of this episode is to dream big. So without further ado, here's Cynthia. I'm just so thrilled and honored to have you on and that you've taken the time to chat with us. This is such a big deal for me personally and for us on the podcast to have someone of your stature and your talents who's now stepped in to the producer role come and talk to us. It's so, so exciting. And so thank you so, so much. And I want to shout out my associate producer, Sarah, who had the brilliant idea of having you on and was like, let's dream big and why not? Maybe she'll say yes. And here you are. So it's such a great nugget to start the conversation about how we can will things into existence as producers and really with enough tenacity, bring the things that really are important to us to life. So thank you.
My pleasure. It was lovely to be asked, to be honest. You know, when you have been working mostly as a performer, to be able to step into this role and to have people take it seriously is really a gift. So thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, a little bit about me, I actually started as an actor and I'm very fascinated by having now done the show for, gosh, I've had over 90 plus guests on the show. There's a lot of actors and performers that transition into producing. And I'm biased, yes, but I tend to think that actors make the best producers because you speak creative, you understand story and character in a way that you've been inside, you know, the skin of an experience, and you get to bring that. And then it really informs how you collaborate at every step of the process. I had someone once say to me that producing is nothing but scene work. And I was like, yes, it's brilliant. So I would love to just kind of bring it back to, you know, if it was producing something you were always interested in, or was it really Drift coming to you that kind of made you perk up and go, this is the one I want to dive in?
I think inadvertently producing was something I was always interested in, but didn't realize that that was the thing I was interested in. Because sometimes when you begin, you don't necessarily know all the roles that you know, occur when a piece is being put together. You don't realize that there is a producer and a person and a this and a that. You just don't know all those particular roles, and you don't know necessarily what they do until much later, until you start to learn about the entire craft. And I think early on, I loved the idea of putting things together, putting people together, putting the right equation together to create something from scratch. And I've always been very curious about, when I'm especially on a set, about the making of something and the way people are treated on set, the way what people need on set, how easy it is to get those things on set. So I think I've inadvertently taken on that role, or decided to learn about that role without knowing that that's what I was doing. And then when Drift came along, it was the opportunity to actually put that into practice. And I jumped at the chance because I knew that that was one of the ways in which we could actually get it made. And I wanted this to be made.
So when you were like in those early stages, what was your impression of what you thought a producer did? Like if you had to define a producer back then, what would that definition have been?
I think in the most simple terms, it's the person who puts the thing together. It's the person who gets all of the parts in the same space to make the actual piece come to life. And that's a very, very basic way of thinking. But for me, that has shifted and changed a lot, in that I actually think it's the person who cultivates the parts of an entire creation and puts them in the room for them to then create. It's making sure that the surrounding space is right and is culled and treated enough for the thing to grow, essentially. It's not just the bringing together of things. It's actually the creating of space so that whatever is in that space grows exponentially.
Yeah. The cultivation of it. So would you say that on the other side of having had your first producing experience, that's how you find that it's, the definition has evolved for you?
Yeah, I think it's, and it shifts and changes, because when you're also playing a role in the piece that you're producing, your foresight and hindsight are doubled, because you can see through the lens of the person that you're playing. You can see through the lens of an actor, but you're also like, there's another lens looking at a bigger picture, which is, I'm in this scene with this person and that person. Are they getting what they need? Are they okay? The scene must be tough for them as well. We should definitely check to make sure they're getting what they need. Or we've got this scene and that scene to get to. Have we got enough time to do that? And I don't want everyone to rush this. So maybe we need to do this a little faster. So the actor brain goes, let's concentrate even more on this so that we can really nail this and then move. So two things are happening at the same time. And I think that's how it shifted for me, because all of that is making sure that you're creating a space that allows for the thing to succeed in the best way possible.
So taking it back then, were you first familiar with the book that Drift was based on, or did it already come to you as a script? And take us through the evolution of the project a little bit.
So I was still in The Color Purple. I think it came to me in 2016 as a script. And originally Bill Paxton was set to direct, and I read it in the interval, or it may have been between two shows, which either one of those decisions is a bad one.
But it speaks highly to your interest and your you know, gumption. Most people struggle to finish scripts without being in the middle of like a huge Broadway show.
bad idea. But I think in the long run, a really good one, because it really like struck me. And when I had read it, I immediately said yes, because I had never seen a character written this way. I had never seen a character in this experience written with this kind of dignity and elegance. And I knew that I wanted to tell that story. Unfortunately, Bill Paxton passed away. Yeah. And I thought that the project would go away completely. And then in 2019, his wife, who was still friends with my agent at the time, asked if we would continue on with the project. Only this time, when it came to me, it came to me as both a performer and a producer. And I just started like the beginnings of my production company. And I said yes. I don't even think I really thought about it before I said yes. I think I said yes before I processed what was being asked of me. And immediately sort of set to work, finding out what was necessary. What do we need? Do we need funding? I reached out to some really wonderful friends who understand how hard it is to make film. And a particular friend of mine helped to fund this as well. And we reached out for other funding, and we all really like got in at the grassroots of making this. And that's kind of how it came to me, as a script first. And then, you know, life happens, and that happening sort of made me put me in a different position to try and make this film.
So a lot of trials and tribulations, like most independent films that are born out of passion, you know, to get where they're headed. So tell us about the day one where you're stepping on set after everything you've gone through, the team has gone through to put this on its toes, and you're standing there as an actor, as a producer, and that feeling of like, we did it, we're here, it's real.
Yeah, very surreal, especially because of what we were shooting that day. So we sort of, which is really lovely, we all sort of came together in the front of the house that we were shooting in, and just, I guess, said like a blessing. Our director did like a traditional Buddhist blessing, which was really lovely. And we just sort of began like that. And the first scene that we shot was part of the flashbacks that you see in the film. So that whole entire week was all of that flashback scene. So we shot that in chronological order before moving on to the rest of the movie. So I guess in the way we shot the hardest parts first, which is, I guess, apropos of what we were doing, in order to get to the reward, you have to go through the trial and the work. And that's where we started. And day one was that. Like, I can't describe to you the relief of being able to begin. The idea that something that was once an idea is now becoming a real and tangible piece of work. That I felt really proud of. I was very, very proud of the fact that we had gotten to day one, myself and the rest of the production team, my lovely, lovely vice president of my company. It was just so awesome to know that we had made this happen. I was really proud of that. Yeah, that was a good day.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you talked a little bit about just, you know, obviously stepping in, you're producing for the first time, you're the lead of this film. It's a very challenging role, demands a lot of you to be present. Was it easy, I guess, to find that balance from the jump of you're the producer, but you're also this actor in this very important story? Or did it take you a beat? What was that process like?
Ongoing. There was no, one day it was easy, you know, and I could, you know, go from one to the other, and very easily I could sit back and forth between producer and actors. And other days it was nigh on impossible. Yeah. And so those situations, you need a really good partner who speaks the same language you do, I mean, creatively, and can understand your tells and the things that you need without you necessarily even having to say, so that they can also be your voice when you cannot be. And in that situation, you have to be completely aligned with the person so that they know when to step in. And I had that in my producing partner, Salome Williams, who honestly, I could not have done this without her. Some of those scenes are really tough and harrowing, and they are very, very hard to come out of. And yeah. So you need someone who is on the outside, who can jump in when you simply cannot, really. Yeah. Yeah. When it's just physically and mentally impossible to come back to the room. Yeah.
Yeah, we talk a lot on the show about this idea of partnerships and how important it is to find your people and that alchemy of creative marriage, really, and how long it takes sometimes to find that person. So I would love for you to talk a little bit more about, you know, your process and finding that partnership, and what are the sort of like, what were the non-negotiables for you and this partner you were going to, you know, not just to be a run your company, but to go on this very specific journey with you? Because I think sometimes, especially when people are starting out and they're artists looking for producers, or, you know, filmmakers looking for a producing partner, there's this hunger to just get someone, or because they look at their credits and it's a bit misguided in the time that it takes of the curation to find the people that really, like you said, speak your language and are vibing at that same frequency as you. So talk a little bit about that, because I really want to drive that home for the listeners.
Yeah, I thought it was really, really important to find someone who understood what kind of work I wanted to do, and also had the kind of determination that I have. I also am lucky enough to have a village of people who are working in different parts of the industry. And I asked someone who had an incredible producing partner if they could ask that producing partner if they had any recommendations. Recommendation is a good thing to take heed of, because if they're coming highly recommended from someone else who is highly recommended from other people, then you're probably on the right tracks. And she came highly recommended by an incredible producing partner of a friend of mine, Rishi Rajani. And I listened to, they sent me a list of people, and I took a few interviews, and the interview I had with Salome felt like it was really aligned with what I wanted to do. She had a passion for the work in a way that I connected with. And I had, strangely enough, met her before when I walked in to meet the director on a production that she was working with. And I remember really liking her when I met her back then. So I already knew that she had the experience working with studios and working with production companies that I admired, who had done work that I admired also. And I thought that she really could bring something, and the experience and the fearlessness that I needed in someone for my production company. And so that's when we sort of begun working together. And I knew that I wanted someone who wasn't afraid to start working with a small company like mine, because it really is a company of four people for now. And I wanted someone who was able to still give us the gravitas as well, to help us to build something that isn't a vanity project for me. You know, it really isn't. I wanted someone who could see the long run, the bigger picture, because sometimes you have to start with a project that is just for you, but the aim is not to stay there. I really want to begin to produce pieces that don't have me in it, that are really made for other people and made as vehicles for new faces and new performers. And I think she understood that immediately. So it was sort of like a no-brainer once I'd had a meeting with her that she would be the right fit, because she does see the bigger picture. And, you know, it's also about finding a person who is willing to grow with you as a person as well. You know, 'cause it's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to be sweetness and light. Sometimes it's going to have to take work, and we have to recenter ourselves, and we have to figure out, okay, so this part of the relationship is now in need of growth, and how do we refocus the company so that we start moving forward in ways that build us exponentially? And she's business-minded as well, which is really great. I think sometimes as creatives, we get really scared of the business part of it. And I didn't want to be, and I wanted someone who wasn't also. And she isn't, and she's fearless. And I think she's really very, very excellent. I'm lucky to have her on my team, because she gets it implicitly, which is really great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the more the creatives are empowered to understand the business and deconstructing the biz side of showbiz, I think the more empowered they are to also step in and be better actors, in my opinion, because there's just a certainty, a self-assuredness that you bring to environments when you know how the whole process functions. And I for a long time, I think it's sort of been kept at bay, or like, oh, that's the creatives and that's the artists. We just kind of separate. And one of the things I talk a lot about on the show too is that, you know, obviously producing has a million shades and different within the umbrella of producing, there's many different types of producers, and the line producer, the physical producer role oftentimes is relegated by others because it's said, oh, well, that's not a creative producer. They're just looking at production. And I think dispelling that, yes, exactly, dispelling that more and more, and that it is this, there are certain people that bring this specificity and, you know, they have a knowledge base for certain parts of the process that you need, but inherently it's all creative and it's all in support of the creative. And similarly, I think the more that actors and artists have interest in understanding that part of it, the better we create a more cohesive industry that is truly collaborative. You know, you understand your place in the ecosystem. So it's really great to hear you say that, someone of your stature and obviously a talent of your stature, because there, I think there are sometimes companies that are created for different intentions, and that's fine. But I think that it is our social responsibility as women of color in this industry to pass the baton forward, to pull up the people coming up under us. And if you can leverage your name and your star power and whatever you've been able to amass, like, that's the work, you know, that's the journey. And so I think it's wonderful that that's obviously your goal and that you're just at the very beginnings of doing that.
You know, as much as it's a responsibility, for me, it's like a guilty pleasure. I just really love the idea of being able to maybe make some pieces that give other people the platform that they need or deserve and the work that they want. And, you know, if we can create pieces that we haven't seen before with faces that we haven't seen before, then great, more the merrier. I really do want to do that. And I love what you were saying. The line producer has a special place in my heart, to be honest, because often it's the line producer who is making sure that you get what you need when you need
it. Yeah.
Sure that everything is running on time. And, you know, sometimes you need, in combination with, you know, really wonderful producers who are on the floor all day, every day, and the line producer who just is like, who will come and make sure that everything is running exactly the way it needs to run. Those people are the unsung heroes sometimes of these pieces, because really without them, the things would fall apart drastically. And when they're great, you are some of the luckiest performers you could ever be if you have great line producers and producers on the floor. I cannot say it enough.
Yeah.
So, like, to all those who are listening, just get to know the people who are on your set. Get to know everybody. I think we sometimes put ourselves in specific places where we siphon ourselves off and siphon off our creativity because we're going to only talk to the performers, or we're only going to talk to just the director. We'll only talk to costume design. But for me, I think this is what has probably spiked my interest as a producer. I really get to know the floor. So I get to know the grips. I get to know the lighting designer. I get to know the costume designer very intimately because I believe that is part of the character. I get to know the line producer, and I get to know DOP. I get to know all of the person who like blows the wind, like, like the scenic department, because they all are in conversation with whatever character you're playing. They have an intimate relationship with who you're playing. And if they never meet you, the person who's playing the character, they can't have as intimate a relationship with the character that you know as well if you don't actually meet them. And so I think for me, that is a thing that I really want to cultivate on my sets, to make sure that everyone knows everyone. Like, I know the person who is doing sound design right now, and this, I know the person who's capturing the sound, I know the person who's doing the mics by name, so that we can actually have a holistic experience of whatever we're doing. Otherwise, there are parts that are left undiscovered.
It's you know, you can only control the journey, the process of what you're making. And everyone goes in, I think, with the best intentions. And if you're lucky, you get all the elements and all the stars aligning, and you get a really solid, incredible piece of work on the other side of it. But it's humans coming together in this really interesting way to create an art that is so collaborative. And everyone, I consider them a a creative partner in the story that you're making. And this idea that, yeah, it is separate, it's below the line, it's above the line, it's you're over there and you play, you sit with your department at lunch. I think that's a disservice to the process. The more that we can all, again, create, bring back the humanity to the fact that we're doing something, especially in the case of Drift, where it is such an intimate experience. And you are, as an actor, putting yourself in the most vulnerable and raw of places in front of strangers. And so it is in your best interest to get to know these humans who are going to be watching out for you so that you can really focus on the job that you're there to do. Yeah. And everybody's got each other's back. It's weird to me because it's psychology 101. It's the simplest thing to possibly explain or do, just like in life, you know? Take interest in others, be a kind person, be a good like, it's just so obvious. But I don't know. I think there's been this thing with Hollywood, right, where there's this separation and status. And I don't know, that just really can create a space on set that is inherently against the very thing that you're there to achieve. And it takes so long to get there that it's like miracles have happened, you know?
But I think it's down to sometimes time, and how I think we allow ourselves the excuse that we don't have enough time to get things done, which means that we stop ourselves from actually creating the relationships that we should. And I think that when we take that excuse out of the way, we are actually faced with enough time to know each other enough, even if it's only a month or two worth of a shoot, because that is in essence, that is a long time to spend day in, day out with each other. If you're spending every day with each other, that's a long time to spend. So in that first week where the time can run away from us, that's when we should really actually be trying to connect as much as we possibly can so that the rest of it becomes easeful. And I think it's not necessarily the Hollywood of it all. I think it's just that we as people tend to make life the reason why we don't connect, when actually the reason why we should connect is life. And that should be applied to film. We as human beings are better off when we are connected to other human beings and when we are working and connecting with people. And if we do that in the right way, then we can start looking at the benefits of it creatively and fiscally, because both things, they stand to gain from that quality, from that endeavor. Yeah.
And I think, I'm sure you can attest to this, I've been on enough sets where I know that when I've been able to create that alchemy, when I've been able to set that blueprint for what's possible, and people are just kind of like, oh, I've never had this care or this attention from X department or X person. Like, I believe that imprints in what you're making in a really special way, you know, and that regardless of the outcome, you can look back and go, yeah, but we really were great to each other, and we looked out for each other, and we were just great collaborators and humans in that process. And people remember that, you know. And I think in an industry that is built upon reputation, longevity of not just who you know, but who knows you and in what context, like, that is such an important part of being a person who can withstand the ups and downs of this industry, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think so too.
So I want to just talk a little bit more about Drift on a personal note. It was really beautiful film, and a hard watch for all the right reasons, you know? It was really interesting because we've seen women be, you know, done horrible things have happened to women on screen since the beginning of time. But watching the scene in the bathtub and the flashbacks from the place that I'm in right now in my life as a woman, like, I had a really strong visceral reaction to it. And maybe I wouldn't recommend watching the movie on your baby moon, which I was with my husband, but it's fine. And it was crazy because I've always been moved extremely by art. That's why I'm in this, but it was a visceral, guttural reaction that I couldn't contain or explain, that I've never had before in anything I've ever watched, because of an experience that I'm currently having. And so for creating that moment, because it's beautiful and it matters. And even though it was really hard to watch, it just, like you said, the integrity and dignity to which Jacqueline just navigates what her experience and how the story unfolds and the way you carry us through it is just beautiful. And I really, really hope everyone makes an effort to go see this film, because it's, I mean, I think you're just getting started in my book with all the things that you have up your sleeve, but you can really tell that this was something that was really profound for you and came from a really incredible space. And so for you to reach to the depths of wherever you went to give us this film, thank you.
Thank you very much for saying that. Thank you. Yeah, it was just like, I knew that I wanted to break open whatever I needed to break open in order to get to what I needed to get to tell the story as fully as I possibly could. I knew it was going to be hard. I knew it was going to hurt like hell, but I was fine with that. I knew that that was what was necessary, because I knew that it was not a singular experience. It was a singular experience that you were watching, but it wasn't necessarily one singular experience in the world. And we just don't get those stories very often. We don't get the story of a woman of color, a Black woman who is a refugee and just trying to make it day by day. Those stories tend to go unnoticed. Those stories tend to go hidden. And they aren't just our stories, but they're stories about people that I think can apply to anyone, to a woman who you pass by, you have no idea what she's going through. She could disappear when you see her once, and you may never see her again, and you don't even notice when she passes by, but all of that is still going on in her, makes her far bigger than the experience that she's been through. It makes her a part of humanity. It makes her human. And I really wanted people to watch it and go and check themselves when looking or meeting other people. And I wanted people to understand that a person going through something, it's not always obvious. We can't always tell, but empathy is really necessary, because you don't know what people are going through. And then to be able to make it clear that a person is more than just the experience that they've been through, that she wants joy, that she wants laughter, that she wants to look good, that she wants to keep and maintain as tidy a place as she can maintain it. Like, even with nothing, she still wants to tidy her bed. Even with nothing, she still wants to put her thing just so. Maybe that the table is actually a rock, but she still has a bedside table and her things are going to go on it, and she's going to keep it tidy. When she's going to go out to dinner, the only thing that makes that the clothes that she's wearing different is a scarf, and she's going to tie it just so, and she's going to make it as tidy as possible, that we don't lose the things that make us us because circumstances change, that those things still exist in us. One of the reasons I wanted her nose rings, I have a nose ring, but I knew that I usually don't really necessarily fight for those things, but I thought that that one piece of jewelry connects her to the modern world. Even though she's so removed from what's going on, this piece of jewelry connects her to the life that she had, connects her to the time that she come from, connects her to the present. And when you look at her, you go, I recognize that. I recognize that. Yeah. Feels really current and it feels really present, but something about her is really not a part of this either. It moved me to think of someone, I could meet, who could be a friend of mine, who is just in a set of circumstances beyond her control, you know?
Yeah. And it gives you a new appreciation for the lens that you put on when you see people in your experience, right? Those background actors that cross your frame when you're out on vacation and you're having your experience, and that they too have a story, and that it's really fascinating. And as someone who loves to travel, and my favorite thing of traveling is just being immersed where the people are, and not, seeing how the normal folk go about their day. What's the Tuesday like for them? Like, that's where I really nerd out. Like, yes, I still want to try all the fun foods and go see the sights, but that's where I'm just like, wow, like, there's so much that unites us, right? And it just really, again, opens that aperture for you just to be reminded of the humanity that we all possess. And like, to your point, that this could be any of us at any moment in time, depending on the circumstances, right? So the layer of compassion and empathy that it, I think it I walked away with, and that I think the movie really gives you, and that she does, we become cleansed in a way. She's on her path to healing. You know, we do feel hope for her. It, like you said, it's like we don't often see that journey of these characters in such a gentle way as well of how we get there. You know, she breaks open on her own time, and we get to be there for every step of the way. So I want to shift gears a little bit. One of the things I talk a lot about on the show are the challenges, right? About what we do, about navigating this career path, all the various paths that you navigate. But I started this show because I wanted to start dismantling this idea of what people perceived producers to be, because it was like, oh, they're at the Academy Awards and they're hanging out with celebrities, or they're making all this money and they're just clinking champagne flutes on the red carpet. And that happens a small percentage of the time. But I sort of became obsessed with making sure people understood the realities of what it takes to do what we do, to have a resume or an IMDb that people can look up and feel impressed by, because it's relentless work behind the scenes that is unforgiving, that is often overlooked. And I wanted desperately to help inform others who were going to navigate this path instead of dissuading them, because I didn't have a resource like this when I started, especially for producers specifically. It's hard to kind of, how do you get into it? How do you do it? Like all of that stuff. So I'm curious, you know, for you, like the challenges when, especially for women and people of color, we've made so many strides, but it continues to be just this glacialist pace of ever, if that's even a word. But, you know, for you, how have you navigated the ups and downs of this industry, of your career path? How have you stayed the course?
I think, honestly, and I hate to sound contrite, but it's just absolute determination. I just refuse to be swayed by anyone when it comes to the types of things I want to make. And the thing is, you can be a part of something and you could try to create something from the ground up. But the truth is, if there are people who just don't want to make the project or don't want to work with you to make the project, the only thing that will keep you going is you believing in the project. And I've found that a good dose of determination is really helpful. You also have to know when something isn't going to work, and you have to surrender to those times when, yeah, this is probably not the thing that is going to, even though I love it, I may be the only one that loves it. So I'm going to have to let this go and dedicate my time to something that I both love and know can work. And I think that's the part that people maybe don't see, the bit before when things are at the very, very beginning, when you have to find a larger collaborator, especially if you're a small production company, you have to go out and you have to seek the help of larger production companies or larger studios who can help to make things, greenlight things, create things from scratch. And that's not always fun work, because you are essentially taking the time to gather the group, whether it's the writer, the director, the production company that will work with you, to create a pitch that works, then to take that to a studio to make the film. And it's hard to get to even that stage. It's hard to get a project off the ground to the stage where you actually get it to pitch stage. And it isn't always fun. It can be completely frustrating because you feel like no one can see what you can see. But finally, when it does happen, it's really thrilling to keep moving forward and making the steps towards an actual production that gets off the ground. But it takes time. These things can take a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a miracle anything comes together, frankly. Once you go through the process once, you're like, this is insane. But so when you're, you know, in those down slumps where maybe you're not feeling as determined, you've been knocked down, you've gotten a ton of rejection, the projects that you love, whatever, the industry, the market, all the things that are happening that are kind of outside of your control, how do you find that in yourself again? How do you fill your creative well? What resources do you use to just do what you need to do, suit up, and continue fighting the good fight?
I guess I have never found myself in a situation where I don't feel determined. I am an A-type person who is very sure of the things that I think work. I am the type of person who, when something, honestly, there is a project that we're working on that I love to bits. And when it came to us in its first iteration, I loved it then, but it didn't quite work. And it honestly did not leave my mind. because it didn't leave my mind, and I couldn't get rid of the feeling of it. I couldn't get rid of the thought of it. I went back to my producing partner and I said, I think we need to get this back on its feet. I think we have to find another way in. And I think we have to redirect and make this work. And we are in a place where we have redirected and the script works, and we are on our way to creating something that I'm really proud of. And I think that, you know, good foresight is something that helps, because that's the thing that will keep you on your path, because you are inevitably going to get no's, and it's going to piss you off and it's going to get annoying. But if you know what your raison d'etre is, if you know what you're actually moving towards, it's very hard to knock you off your path. I believe that rejections are simply yeses in disguise. They are the space makers for you for the things that you actually need. They clear the path for the yeses that are waiting in line for you. And so I might get annoyed for a day, and then I will probably redirect that annoyance and call up my producing partner and my manager and say, okay, hey, this is the thing that's happened. What else are we looking at? Where are we going from here? What are the interesting things that we haven't taken a look at or haven't quite been aware of that we need to be aware of so that we can redirect and make things work? And it's a constant state of redirect, refocus, replace, and move forward. And I know it's easier said than done, but I really want to encourage people to allow their determination to be the thing that leads, because rejection will come and you'll have down days. But if you sit down for too long, things will pass you by. And I'm a firm believer in making sure that you do heal and you do take the time to acknowledge your feelings and acknowledge what you're going through. But do not let that be a thing that swallows you whole, because you won't get up again. And the whole point is, yes, you get kicked down, but you get up again and keep moving forward.
Beautifully said. So it sounds like the grief that sometimes comes with the loss of projects or relationships, even people that, you know, inadvertently screw you over in the deal making process or whatever, like these things of course happen, but you process them and then you let them go. You don't let this stick to you and defeat you in a way that prevents you from you give yourself the time to, as I say, have a pity party, however long that is, feel your feelings, but then pivot into, redirect that energy into something that's positive, especially when it comes to projects, like back to what else is on your slate that then you can put that channel, that energy towards, right? And how do you fill your creative well? Where do you go when you're like, all right, I need to find inspiration?
Fashion, documentaries, people, conversations. A lot of my good friends have filled up my creative well, like having conversations with them and, you know, rethinking some of like decisions that I, you know, may have made before. Like a friend of mine, we went to dinner and she was like, hey, so are you gonna come back to do theater too? And I honestly had not, I had thought about it, but I hadn't sat in it properly, and just having the conversation sort of redirected how I was thinking about it. And now I'm really ready to figure out what that looks like. And, you know, listening to certain pieces of music and figuring out what story is that telling. Or I saw a moth story just recently and thought, oh, this would be really beautiful as a film. And yeah, just I grab inspiration from loads of things.
Yeah. There's so much all around us. Well, I do want to be mindful of time. We're at the very end of our time together, and I just want to make sure we get to the lightning round, which are those fun five quick questions just to take us out. And it ties in perfectly to everything you were already saying. So before we dive in, I just want to thank you again, Cynthia, for taking the time, for coming on. I'm so excited for you as you start this journey as a producer. It's like you're at the very beginning, and you just have so much more, I'm sure, that you have up your sleeve. And I'm excited, so jazzed for you to see what you guys come up with. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so here is the lightning round. What's a song that teleports you to a happy place?
You know, I just been listening to Jason Rob Brown, because we have a concert coming up, and there's a song called Summer in Ohio. It's just brilliant.
What's the latest piece of art that moved you? Book, show, anything?
Poor Things.
Fill in the blank. When I'm overworked, blank helps ease the stress.
Shopping helps ease the stress.
What is one of the most worthwhile investments you've ever made? And it doesn't have to be financial.
I did this a long time ago, and that was investing in an assistant. I could not do this work by myself. I've had a string of really great assistants.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay, this is the last question. So what is one question that you have for the next producer who comes on the podcast? I don't know who that is yet. And I can tell you the last previous guest who came on, they actually left a piece of advice for the next producer. And what they said, her wisdom that she wanted to impart, this is Coco Franchini, who is Kate Blanchett's producing partner. Her wisdom was, don't count your chickens before they hatch and get everything in writing. So,
good one. Good. I would say check in with yourself and find out what you need physically to keep yourself alert and ready and happy.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Cynthia. Again, this is awesome. I'm so excited. I'm just so excited for you, for us, for everything. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Thanks so much for tuning in and doing this life thing with me. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. I'm at Carolina Gropa. The show's at Angle on Producers. And I'll see you next week. Beijos.